I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Today is Monday, November 27th. I'm your host, Mike Rocky, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts for today's show, Robert Vallejos and Zach Haydorn. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
And if you have any questions, as always, we would love to hear from you. The number to call is 515-605-9345. Again, that number, 515-605-9345. And if you do want to be part of today's show, don't forget to press 1. That allows us to know whether or not we should bring you on live. If you prefer to email the show, you can do that as well. Emails are always welcome. The email address to use is mmalivecast@gmail.com. All right, guys. So we had UFC Fight Night 122 from Shanghai, China, this past Saturday night. Between the odd start time and the lack of star power, I don't expect a big number of viewers for this one. However, the main event did have star power with Michael Bisping taking on Kelvin Gastelum. And as we talked about last week, I don't think any of us really felt that Bisping had any business taking this fight. And the results of the fight kind of bore that out as well. So Gasol landed a huge left hand, and that was all she wrote for Bisping. The knockout came at 2 minutes 30 seconds of round one. Sadly, Zach, a lot of us kind of saw this one coming. You wrote about it on MMATorch.com. So I'll start with you. What were your thoughts on what you saw?
Yeah, honestly, if there was an outcome that I thought could be worse than what I was expecting, the outcome from Saturday night was it. You know, I expected Bisping to walk into that fight and get handily defeated, but I just didn't necessarily foresee an outcome where he would get knocked out as bad with such a vicious punch that looked just incredibly awful. And I think it just put a icing on the cake for an unfortunate circumstance of him being in the fight when he shouldn't have. And if there was a bad outcome to be had out of this, I think we saw it on Saturday night outside of him being permanently injured. So felt bad for him watching the thing. It seemed to me, I was just you know, waiting for something awful to happen. And then, you know, it did. So pretty much par for the course and a little bit worse than what I was expecting. So hopefully Bisping really takes some time here, reassesses things, takes a break, and then decides what to do. So that's my hope anyway.
Yeah, Robert, if I remember right, correct me if I'm wrong, you weren't as positive about, you know, as far as which way this fight was going to go. I thought you were a little bit more on the fence. Am I right?
Yeah, not only was I on the fence, but I actually made the bold decision of picking Bisping to win this fight.
And so were you surprised by this then?
Not necessarily, because I think it was a very likely outcome, just given the close proximity of when his last fight happened and how that fight ended, and then the power that Gastelum does have. So it's not something that was completely out of the realm of possibility, with that said, it was extremely jarring to actually see it happen, knowing all the circumstances that surrounded it.
Yeah, that was a vicious knockout. Robert, stay with you here. His retirement fight's going to be at UFC Fight Night 127 in London. Anyone in particular you'd like to see him fight?
To be honest, I would like them to put him up against someone on the very lower level. I don't want anybody to make their name off of him in their last fight, because then I just don't like when we have retirement bouts that are like that, where they're, you know, it's one thing when you do it in like a pro wrestling setting where you put the younger guy over and the torch is passed. There's really no need for that in MMA, and it bothers me when it happens that way. I'm more of a fan of, you know, Uriah Faber fighting Brad Pickett in his final fight, so I can't even think of someone off the top of my head, but I would want a guy that's definitely lower tiered in the middleweight division.
Yeah, so you don't want to see him fight like a Luke Rockhold or Weidman or anything like that?
No, there's no point to that. And what's to be gained from anyone in that situation, especially if Bisping were to win? I mean, then he probably would put off his retirement, which is something that I don't think anybody really wants to see. I mean, sure, you could get that would be a very marketable fight, and it's a fight that we'd all get excited about, but it's just something I don't really necessarily want to see. You can manufacture a good exit for Bisping. There's no need to sort of feed him to the wolves.
Yeah, not only that, but Bisping can sell a fight. You know, I think his opponent really doesn't matter. You know, add in the fact that it is his final fight, it's going to sell itself. Zach, any ideas as far as who you would like to see them match him up against?
Yeah, I'm in the same court as Robert on this one. I think for his last fight, you know, honestly, I think it should be somebody that maybe, you know, will challenge him a little bit. It will be an entertaining fight, but also someone that, you know, he can conceivably beat at this point in his career, and someone that's, like Robert said, not going to, you know, gain a whole bunch of notoriety for being the guy to, you know, retire Michael Bisping. I think it being Bisping's last fight, as you guys just talked about, it sells itself, and I think the UFC can market that enough to make the event successful. And I think you go with that, have the retirement celebration in the octagon, an interview after he wins, and then hopefully at that point he can ride off into the sunset. That's how I would like to see it go, a lot like Faber's retirement went.
Yeah, I agree with both of you here. I wouldn't mind like someone like maybe like a Vitor Belfort type, you know, somewhere around that range. That's probably right. Yeah, what I would like to see. So, all right, guys, you know what? I'm going to just quickly run down the rest of the main card results, and then just feel free to interject if you have any comments regarding any of these fights. So in the co-main event, it was Li Jingliang defeating Zach Otto by TKO, 2 minutes 57 seconds of round one. I thought Li fought a really smart fight here, and I thought he looked really good, too. Getting the TKO victory. You can tell it was an emotional win for him, too, in front of his hometown fans. So it was a good fight. I thought he performed really well, and I'm looking forward to what he does next. Next, we had Wang Guan over Alex Caceres by split decision. I had this one clearly for Guan, so I was a little surprised to see a split in this one. But at least the right guy got the win, according to the judges. So I was happy about that. And then the main card opener, it was Alex Garcia subbing Muslim Salikov via rear naked choke, 3 minutes 22 seconds of round one. I do want to mention the preliminary headliner where Zabit Magomedov Sharipov submitted Shaman Moraes. Magomedov Sharipov, he looks like the real deal. And I'm really looking forward to him taking on top 15, top 10 competition. Not sure if you guys saw that fight, but of all the performances, well, besides Gastelum, I thought he really looked good here. Anything to add, Robert, to any of this?
No, because I didn't watch the prelims.
And Zach, did you happen to catch it?
Yeah, I didn't catch the prelims either, but I kind of heard about the performance, and it got me piqued, too, to see what he can do fighting in – and with some better competition. So excited for that future.
All right, guys, let's move on to this coming weekend. So between Bellator and the UFC, we have three events coming up. Bellator 189 is Friday night. The main event is a women's featherweight title fight between Arlene Blanco and Julia Budd. Rafael Lovato Jr. takes on Chris Honeycutt in the co-main event. Also on the card is Chidi Jokowani versus Huzaki Kato and Adam Piccolotti versus David Rickles. Then we head over to the UFC also on Friday night with the Ultimate Fighter finale. And while the main event isn't set just yet, there are four fights that are set, including Andrew Sanchez versus Ryan James, Joe Soto versus Brett Johns, Sean O'Malley of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series fame taking on Tyrion Ware, and finally Eric Spicely goes up against Gerald Merchart. Then on Saturday night, it's the big one, UFC 218. So this is where I kind of want to get into the breakdown of this card. In the main event, Jose Aldo gets a chance to win his title back from the man who took it, Max Holloway. Last time I looked, which is earlier this afternoon, Holloway was a pretty solid 3-1 favorite. Robert, do you think Aldo is a live dog here, or do you see this one going much like the first fight?
Yeah, I could definitely see it going like the first fight, and not so much that I think Aldo has lost that much of a step as some people seem to think, because it wasn't that long ago that he looked pretty dang good against Frankie Edgar at UFC 200. I just think Holloway right now is the better fighter. Holloway is surging, so I would definitely go with Holloway in this situation. We have to take ourselves back to that first fight. Aldo looked just fine early on in that fight until the third round when things swung the other way. So it's not like there's such a gap that spread kind of shocks me a little bit. But I really think that this is going to be Holloway's night, with sort of his second recoronation over Aldo.
Yeah, you bring up a good point too, because that Frankie Edgar fight seems like it was just like years ago, and it really wasn't that long ago that he, like you said, he looked really good again. Zach, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm definitely predicting Holloway in this one too. And I agree with much of what Robert said. I think he is just a guy he's on a roll right now. He's riding a tidal wave of success. He's confident. And I think he's just clicking on all cylinders at the exact right time. And I think he keeps it going this Saturday. I think in the first fight, like Robert said, Aldo looked good. And I don't think it's so much as Aldo being falling off the wagon, but like Robert said, it's Holloway stepping up. I think in the first fight, Aldo was pretty aggressive out of the gate. In my opinion, I think he's going to take a look at that strategy and kind of come out a little bit more tepid, a little bit more on the defense to try and make the fight go a little bit longer and see what Holloway can do with that. That said, I think that strategy is going to fall a little bit short, and I'm still taking Holloway with a decision victory.
Going with the decision. All right. I like Aldo. It just seems like once he lost to McGregor, it seemed like, the media as well as fans kind of wrote him off fairly quickly. And maybe, it was justified. But like Robert brought up, the Edgar fight kind of just reminded you just how good this guy really is. I'm not saying he's going to beat Holloway here. I think it's going to be a good competitive fight. And I'm going to go with you, Zach, as well, and say Holloway by decision. All right, in the co-main event, Alistair Overeem takes on Francis Ngannou, with the winner probably getting a shot at Stipe Miocic. Zach, I'll start with you on this one. Who gets their hand raised, and how do you see it ending?
Yeah, I'm really excited for this fight, and I'm not a huge heavyweight guy, but I'm excited to see how this one plays out. I haven't been overly impressed with Overeem's last couple fights. I just, something about him has looked kind of slow and lumbering, and I think that's going to hurt him in this fight against Ngannou, who's a younger and more powerful opponent. So with that said, I think that Ngannou is going to win this one by knockout. I think he's just going to like I said, that lumbering kind of slow paced fighting, I think it's going to hurt Overeem, and then Nagano is going to be able to tag him with something big and significant to hurt him and take him down. So I'm looking forward to this one. I want Nagano to be the victor here too, because I think him against Stipe is going to be a really interesting fight to analyze and watch as well. So Nagano, knockout.
And Robert.
Yeah, I'm going to go the same as Zach. I'm going to go with Ngannou. I just think that in his recent fights, I think what we've seen from Overeem is this extreme cautiousness not to take big shots. But he was fighting, you know, older guys in those fights. Now he's going to fight somebody with some real power in their hands, and I think it's going to come home to roost for him. I think this is a really good opportunity for the heavyweight division, for the UFC as a whole, to have somebody new in that contendership position. Because if Overeem wins, we just talked about it, you know, it was the last week or 2 weeks ago, when we're back to this sort of, you know, Overeem, Verdum, we don't know what's ever happening with Velasquez, just that same old heap at the top of the heavyweight division. Right. And Ngannou win here really freshens up the entire division, even if he doesn't get that shot immediately at Stipe.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, everything you've seen from Ngannou has been pretty spectacular. I mean, I don't think the guy showed any weaknesses yet. And Overeem, he's been around the block a couple, 500 times. So, yeah, I mean, obviously Overeem's chin definitely isn't what it used to be. So I think Ngannou's going to catch him with a knockout shot, and I will take Ngannou by knockout as well. All right, next we have Henry Cejudo taking on Sergio Pettis in what should be a really good fight in the flyweight division here. Robert, who do you have winning the fight? And also, do you think the winner of this fight gets DJ next, or do you think they have to sit and wait until after Dillashaw?
Well, for the fight, I'm going to pick Cejudo. I think just based on what we've last seen out of each one of these guys, I think Pettis looked like a guy who's still sort of, you know, learning how to ride the bike. Whereas last time we seen Cejudo, he had like this scorched earth mentality to him. And I think it's going to carry over into this fight. I still maintain that he should have got the decision against Benavidez. And if you take that out of the equation, his only loss was that loss to DJ a while back. And there's definitely no shame in that. And I think he's a better fighter since then. I think this is sort of like your ticket to DJ. But I got a feeling that the TJ fight is going to happen. The thing that will probably hold it up, obviously, is it seems like DJ has stated firm that he wants a lot of money for the Dillashaw fight. And if the UFC is not willing to pay that, then maybe this is the default fight, which isn't a terrible fight if it's Cejudo with the victory. But I get the feeling that fight is going to come together with TJ and DJ. And the winner of this fight might have to wait a little while before we see them again in the octagon in that title picture.
Are you concerned at all by just how quiet it's been regarding that fight?
A little bit, but I don't think that necessarily means that it's totally off the table. I think if it was the case where DJ was again, you know, airing his grievances towards Dana White and towards the UFC, that maybe we'd be in the area where it's really has no chance of happening. I think that, you know, TJ just won the belt not that long ago. There's probably a little bit of time that needs to settle before they can agree on a day and the compensation. I think DJ is going to get paid for what he's going to do next.
Yeah, I hope he does. I think he should get paid. Zach, do you agree with Robert as far as Cejudo win? And also, as far as the next fight, do you see them waiting this one out? Or do you think Cejudo, or actually the winner of the fight, getting a shot at DJ?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Robert. I think Cejudo is gonna walk out victorious on Saturday. I mean, watching him in his last fight, he was just a man possessed out there. I was really impressed last time, and seeing that, I don't want to bet against him here. So I think it's going to be a really competitive fight, but I think at the end, Cejudo is going to come out on top. As far as where he goes next, obviously, I think, and I'm of the thought of that, you know, if DJ and TJ can get together and make it work, like, that's the fight that I want to see. I think it's been a kind of a long time coming for Johnson to get a fight like that. Those type of fights are what, you know, the UFC is booking more and more of these days, you know, high profile kind of fights between two guys from typically from different weight divisions. And I think that's where they want to go. That said, with Cejudo in this victory, I think he'll kind of be on the back burner until that's figured out. If they can't get it settled, I think he will slide right in to face DJ. And then if they do get that settled, he'll kind of be waiting in the wings and be first up once the dust settles on that super fight.
Yeah, I agree with what both you guys say here. I'm going with Cejudo, and I also would like to see, and I also do think that the next fight for DJ is going to be Dillashaw. So, all right, guys, let's take our first break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up with the main card, and then move on to some UFC and MMA news.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, guys. This next fight is the one I'm probably most looking forward to. Eddie Alvarez versus Justin Gaethje. Robert, I'm going to start with you here. Who wins? And a better question, I guess, would be, do you see this one going to the judges' scorecards?
No, I don't see this any way that that's going to happen. For no other reason that even if you hear Eddie Alvarez talking this morning, you know, he's prepared that this is just going to be two guys brawling. And these are two guys that are well-equipped to engage in a very, very entertaining brawl. I do think Gaethje gets the win here, but I'm not completely sold on that as of yet. I think after the McGregor loss and that weird early stoppage, no contest with Poirier, we've kind of forgotten that going into the UFC 205, we were really high. Everyone was really high on how good Eddie Alvarez was and how all the different tools that he can use and his veteran instincts, which I still think are going to be on play. With that said, I think this fight's actually going to be more about athleticism, and I'm going to favor the younger Gaethje. I would like to say that, oh, maybe Alvarez has taken too much damage over time, but even in the limited amount of fight, Gaethje has taken a ton of damage. So that's not really a good argument, but I'm going to take Gaethje here. It's one that at first looking at it, I'm wondering maybe should this be like a 5-round fight? Wondering if they should have moved it to the day prior, but I don't think there's any need for even 3 rounds of this fight. So there's no need for it to be a main event. This is a fight that's got huge expectations. Hopefully it lives up to the hype.
Yeah, I don't see this one going 3 rounds, let alone 5. So I'm okay where they have it on the card. Zach, how do you see this one going?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think it's going to be just a brawl. I think it's going to be the fight of the night. I think it's going to live up to expectations. As far as who's going to win here, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take Eddie Alvarez. I think, to me, on the surface, I think he's got a lot to prove. I like fighters that have that in them, and I also think, you know, he has some experience to draw on in which he can kind of be the more mature and controlled fighter in a fight that on the surface looks like it will be anything but that. So I think with that in play, I think he's able to kind of temper it and then able to knock Gaethje out with something big. But I don't think it's going to go the distance. I think one way or the other, it's going to wrap up somewhere in the first or second round. And I'm going with Alvarez, though.
Yeah, you know, this is a tough one for me to predict. I mean, I like Justin Gaethje. Obviously, I like his style. But, yeah, there's something about Alvarez and just the way he fights. And I think if he fights a smart fight, and it did scare me a little bit by what, you know, Robert brought up, because I did read that as well.
Right.
As far as what Alvarez is expecting. Now, had he come out and say, you know, I'm not going to get into a firefight with this guy. I am going to play it, you know, fight a smart fight. I would definitely favor Alvarez. So just his comments kind of sways me towards Gaethje just a little bit. But, you know, then again, it could be just him, you know, playing cat and mouse a little bit here with Gaethje too. You know, have him expect him to come out and just engage, you know, and throw hands from the get-go when, you know, maybe Alvarez does come out and, you know, try and use his wrestling. So I'm going to go with Alvarez, but I am nowhere near confident with that pick. So, all right, guys, and finally in the main card opener, we go to the women's strawweight division for Tisha Torres versus Michelle Waterson. I think this should be another really good fight. I really like this card. There's a lot of good fights on it. Zach, I'll start with you on this one. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this fight too. I think it's going to be interesting, kind of the two different styles going at each other in a classic matchup that features that. That said, I'm going to go with Torres here. I think the story of the fight, the way I see it playing out, is Watterson kind of looking for that takedown, looking for that submission, and on the flip side, Torres just defending that and trying to strike when she can. And ultimately, I think that win. I think she's going to be able to hit Watterson enough times to kind of slow down the takedown attempts and ultimately get the victory in the end.
And Robert, how do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, I've had a tough time all day thinking about who I was going to pick for this one. Both of these women really do have really good resumes, and I think everybody kind of cooled on Watterson after her loss to Nama Yunus, but then where's Nama Yunus now?
Right.
So I don't think that loss is nearly what it was made out to be. I think there's been a little bit of backlash against Watterson because she's definitely someone that the UFC is looking to push. And it seems like for a lot of these fighters, as soon as the UFC gets behind them, their career seems like it takes somewhat of a nosedive. Like they can't seem to really get all the ships going in the right direction with that. I'll take Watterson here just based on her experience, but I would not be shocked if either of these women come out on top.
Yeah, this is a really close fight for me as well, but I'm going to side, at least today, I'm going to side with Tisha Torres. Now, you know, come Friday, who knows, that might switch over to Watterson, but yeah, I'm going to go with Tisha Torres with the decision here. So, all right, guys, let's move into the MMA News notebook. Nate Diaz's coach, Richard Perez, was on Submission Radio, and he kind of sprayed all fields. He talked about Tyron Woodley and how Tyron's trying to get a fight with Diaz, but the UFC isn't offering the right amount of money. He also talked about a third fight against Conor McGregor. But, Robert, I mean, $15 million, what's your take on Perez's comments?
My take on that is the same as it's been, that he's not getting out of bed for anybody other than McGregor. So that's why in the world of negotiating, you throw out something so ridiculous because you're actually willing to settle for something else. But you make your initial claim just seem so outlandish. I don't think, you know, he's necessarily a fighter that can command that. If he's not fighting McGregor, like we were saying before, there's some metrics that can suggest that he's technically one of the biggest draws the UFC has ever seen. But we've never actually seen that divorce from Conor McGregor. So until he fights somebody like a Woodley and proves he standalone is a major draw, I think it's a bit of just public posturing and kind of part of Nate Diaz's overall presentation.
So what if I guess the Conor McGregor fight never comes to fruition? You think he's content with just sitting on the sidelines?
It wouldn't shock me just based on everything that the Diaz brothers have said in the past, where they, you know, they like to fight, so to speak, but they view it much more as a job and something that they don't have to do. They don't seem to strike me as the type of people that are going to be, you know, wasting out their glory years in some gymnasium on some local cards fighting out the thing. If they've made enough money, they seem more than content to walk away from what they're doing. So I don't see it. If that fight disappears, you know, Nate would need to have some huge leverage somewhere else. I just don't think he's a guy that's going to be back to fighting Michael Johnson on a Fox card ever again in his career.
Do you think there is a chance he does fight Woodley if the McGregor fight falls apart?
If given all the other options, that'd be the biggest payday that he could get. But there, you know, there's all these other people within his own division. I know there's some prestige to holding the title and there's a financial incentive to gain the title, but if he can get a much more lucrative fight within his own division, I think that's probably where he's more likely to end up if he does fight somebody other than McGregor.
Yeah, I agree with that last part for sure. And Zach, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I agree with most everything that you guys said. I think $15 million is, you know, obviously that's ridiculous, but I think it's more of a positioning thing than anything else. I think he's setting himself up to look like the guy that can command that much and then, you know, eventually settle on something less than that, because deep down I don't think he's, you know, completely insane and realizes that he's not worth that much. As far as the McGregor fight, you know, I think and rightfully so. I think Big Dude is holding out for that fight, and I think he is very confident that it will happen because it's one of the biggest fights that the UFC has that they can put on, and I think rightfully so he believes that the UFC is not gonna walk away from that, and he's gonna double down on that opinion and wait for the big payday and not put himself in a position to potentially miss that because of injury, or if he takes another fight and loses in Grand Crossing, well then his marketability in the McGregor fight goes down a bit. You know, he's at his highest profile right now on the sidelines waiting for that McGregor fight to come to fruition. So until that's 100% completely dead, I fully believe he's going to wait on the sidelines for that payday to come.
All right. And if Nate Diaz getting $15 million isn't ridiculous, it appears Manny Pacquiao is also trying to get in on the Conor McGregor sweepstakes. He posted a picture of McGregor on his Instagram account with the following statement. Happy Thanksgiving. Stay fit, my friend. Zach, I'll go to you with this. What do you think the chances are we see this boxing match?
I think... I just kind of chuckle thinking about the whole thing. It's just, you know, I really think the chances are slim at this point. I don't think, you know, Pacquiao is a great fighter and a great boxer, but I don't think he has the personality to go on the big promotional tours and all the marketing that goes into a McGregor fight, because really that's what the whole thing is. It's a big show and it's a performance, if not anything else. And I just don't see him in that role. I don't think the fight would be intriguing. I think what was intriguing about the Mayweather fight was that it was the two biggest names in both of their sports, both guys who can sell well and have, you know, incredible personalities, and all those things coming to a head at the same time. I don't think you can recreate that with just anybody. And I don't think it's something that people necessarily want to see as much as they wanted to see McGregor Mayweather. So for that reason, I think, you know, Pacquiao's grasping at some straws here. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think certainly it won't happen before McGregor heads into the octagon again.
Robert, if you had to choose one fight, would you rather see McGregor fight Pacquiao or Malignaggi?
Oh, I'm going Paulie all the way on that for two reasons. One, Pacquiao's a much better fighter than Paulie, so I think it would be very one-sided. Not that the Malignaggi fight wouldn't be one-sided. And second, I think now, you know, I think Paulie's 15 minutes of fame in the MMA world may have come to an end, but – you know, take ourselves back to the summer. That was good times when Paulie was making headlines every other week. Him and McGregor fit each other much better than Mayweather McGregor, and definitely much better than McGregor Pacquiao. So if I have to pick between the two, I'm going Paulie all the way.
Yeah, I mean they were making just multiple headlines every day. So there was never a shortage of anything to talk about when it came to those two. Zach, same question to you. Which fight would you rather see, Pacquiao or Malignaggi?
Yeah, Paulie for sure. I for the same reasons. I just think it's just more of an interesting fight. It certainly would be more of a competitive fight, I guess. But it's just the Pacquiao thing. I don't know. It just doesn't interest me. It doesn't, you know, make me perk up at all. I think a lot of that has to do with the, you know, the personality. And I think, you know, like Robert said, Malignaggi and McGregor were making headlines, you know, daily there for a couple weeks. And there's a lot to build on storyline wise going into a fight like that, and a lot to work with. So that's, you know, absolutely Paulie all the way.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all that. I don't think there's any chance we see either fight, but if I had to choose one, I would definitely want to see Malignaggi. So in a little bit more serious news here, former UFC fighter Taihun Bang received a 10-month jail sentence from the Seoul Central District Court for fixing his fight against Leo Luntz at UFC Fight Night 79. Robert, are you surprised that there hasn't been a bigger deal made about this?
I really am, and it comes from all sides, because this caught wind, you know, earlier last week, and there was a few people, you know, you would see on social media saying, hey, how come the big MMA news sites aren't covering this? And then they did later in the week. And it's weird how, you know, is it like sort of an indictment on how mainstream the UFC really is? Because what if this were to happen in any other of what we consider our major sports? You know, this is the ultimate sin in sports, match fixing, essentially. You know, you think of how FIFA is so tied up with all these things. You think back to the Tim Donaghy scandal in the NBA 10 years ago. This is a very, very serious issue, and it's tied to the most high-profile mixed martial arts league in the entire country. And not only am I shocked about the little amount of media attention this has received, I'm even more shocked that we haven't heard anything from the UFC. Last week, we talked about this new sort of culture of public silence that the UFC has had. If there was ever an opportunity or a justifiable reason for Dana White to go on a tomato face rant, it's probably about possible fixing within your sport. I think that's a justifiable reason to really speak up and really take a stand, you know, come out. If this was truly is a rogue incident, come out and firmly, you know, proclaim that this is a rogue incident. This whole thing is really weird, which makes me – I'm not trying to be conspiratorial here, but it makes me think, is there more to this that we're just not hearing, or is this something that there's even less to that the headlines are more sensational than what's actually at the surface?
Yeah, it is a bit alarming, and it kind of – you know, I think we talked a little bit about this last week, too, as far as just the social perception of the sport of mixed martial arts. You know, it's still considered, you know, I don't think it's considered as widely, you know, viewed as a sport as, you know, obviously your big three or your big four as far as the NFL, Major League Baseball, hockey. So I think that has a lot to do with it. It's almost like when an NFL player gets busted for performance-enhancing drugs. It's like, it's no big deal. You know, the media might mention it, but that's about it. He goes away for his four games, and that's the last you hear about it. But in baseball, if you hear about it, I mean, it's the end of the world. You would think someone, you know, defamed Babe Ruth's statue or something. It's just funny how, you know, the media kind of, and, you know, just people in general perceive these things. Zach, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I'm shocked and confused by the whole thing too. You know, it doesn't make sense on a variety of different levels. Like Robert said, if there was ever a time for the UFC to get out and make a statement on something, like this would be it. This is their sport. They're kind of they're the leader, you know, in the MMA market, and you'd think that they'd want to make sure that they were on the side of, you know, that this is totally uncalled for. It's certainly not allowed. It's not, you know, it's just, we are not even remotely close to anything that has to do with, you know, match fixing like that and fight fixing. And instead they've stayed silent. And if it was a PR strategy that kind of kept it out of the news or whatever, like props to them, but you'd think that they just want to get on the right side of it before people, you know, would make their own opinion. So for that I'm really surprised. You know, and then as far as the actual punishment goes, you know, I think it, you know, it is what it is. And if you do something like that, you kind of have to face the consequences.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with, you know, facing the consequences. And I guess we'll see, you know, I mean, we'll see if they do end up saying something maybe this coming weekend. But then again, it might not be the best time to bring something like that up when you're trying to publicize and sell, you know, a big UFC event. So, yeah, very interesting. And their silence is most interesting. So, all right, guys, let's take our second break. And when we come back, we do have a caller on hold. And then after that, we will jump into another round of Fact or Fiction.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, guys, we do have a caller on hold, so let's bring him or her on now. 814, you are on. State your name and the town you're calling from.
Ryan from Crumlin, Maryland.
How you doing, Ryan? What's on your mind tonight?
Good. First question I have for you, I know this would be probably wouldn't never happen, but you say, like, if Michael Bisping would fight Matt Hamill, do you think he would have a shot at beating Matt Hamill?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think I would take Bisping to win that fight. Zach, what about you?
Yeah, same here. I don't think there's any reason, at least at this point, to think that he wouldn't. I'm not, you know, sure that it would happen, but I think he definitely could win. Absolutely.
Yeah, Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Bisping might not have been the most dominant champion, but he's still a relevant UFC fighter. I think he would have no problem with Matt Hamill.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, and what else you got for us, Ryan?
Okay, I thought you had a question on Alistair Overeem. When he failed that drug test against Brock Lesnar, does he get tested more often than, say, someone that's never failed a drug test before in UFC?
Yeah, that's a good question, Robert. I don't know. You might have a bit more info on that. As far as I know, is it considered random testing?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that he would be on any kind of increased program because that wasn't USADA testing, which they're using now. So that was way before USADA was even considered in the picture. So I don't think so, but I couldn't tell you definite on that. It's interesting to think about, though, if that does happen, like if someone like John Jones would be accelerating his testing. But as we've seen with the USADA logs, it's very inconsistent on who gets tested when. There doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason, nor should there be if it's truly random.
Yeah, you bring up a good point because I think, yeah, just because you got popped for a failed test previously, I think you're kind of getting to, you know, towards a slippery slope there if you are, you know, focusing more on certain fighters than others. So I would kind of, you know, agree to, you know, with Robert as far as it, you know, being more of a random drug testing. Zach, any different thoughts there?
No, it's all, I think with USADA, it is all about the randomness. That's the key to it. And I think if they start testing people based on previous results, it goes against, you know, the randomness of it, which they don't want to do.
Yeah, for sure. Ryan, did I answer your question?
Yes. I have a question on Chris Cyborg. Didn't there ever come a day where they have a weight class for 155 pounds? Because I know that's close, more natural to her natural weight. And I think the average female in the United States weighs maybe about 160 pounds, though. I don't see why there isn't like a heavier weight class for females.
Yeah, seeing how much trouble they're getting fighters to fight at 145, I can't see them going a weight class above that. Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, same here. And I think, you know, man, I mean, as much as that might be true about, you know, the average female being 160 pounds, I think, you know,
they're
really
not UFC fighters.
Are in a position. Well, right, exactly. And I think for that reason, coupled with the fact that, like, look, there's already the divisions are pretty watered down as it is, and you add another one in there, and you're really like, what are you going to get at that point? I think that's a point of concern. And then, yeah, like you said, you know, most of the population is not UFC fighters, so I would stray away from that if it was up to me.
Robert, same feelings?
Yeah, I don't really see it happening. And even look at Gabby Garcia, who has to fight internationally just because she can't find a lot of opponents,
right,
you know, stateside or even in Brazil, so she has, yeah, to fight in Japan with these weird gimmicky fights. So I just don't know if the talent pool, as they claim, is so thin for 145. I don't think it would be there for 155. Cyborg is just, she's a once in a generation athlete, which in any other sport would be to her advantage, and it's a little bit to her disadvantage in MMA.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Ryan, anything else for us tonight?
Do you think Jack Swagger will fight someone that's never had a mixed martial arts fight, or do you think he'll fight someone that's had at least one or two fights in Bellator?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I usually like the way Bellator brings up their fighters with, I guess, less experience, so to speak. You know, I like the way they've handled AJ McKee, James Gallagher. But then again, they threw kind of Aaron Pico in, you know, their biggest pay-per-view in the company's history, and we kind of saw what happened there. So, you know, that's a tough one. I think they're going to want to capitalize on Swagger sooner rather than later, considering he's not a young guy anymore. So, you know, I think they put him up against someone who's not necessarily early in their career, like someone with no record. I think they will put him up against someone who does have an established MMA record. However, I don't think they're going to put him up against someone with an undefeated record. Let's just say that. Robert, any thoughts for, besides that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it'll be an established fighter, but it's probably a guy that none of us have ever heard of. I don't think whoever he fights will pass my Wikipedia test.
Yeah, but Robert, I think most of the fighters on the Bellator cards are fighters we've never heard of. So,
very true. And I think these MMA companies are catching on. I'm finding more fighters with Wikipedia pages. So I think they've caught on to me.
They caught on to the podcast. And yes, that's exactly what's going on. I like it, though. All right. Zach, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, at this point, if they signed him for a reason. I think they want to get a number out of him. I think they want to get what they can now. And I think to do that, you got to put him against somebody that is of, you know, some sort of competition, so the viewing audience doesn't think it's a total, you know, setup. And so for that reason, I think he's going to go in there with somebody that has some experience, but possibly without a Wikipedia page.
That's the thing we're all looking forward to the most is his opponent. Does his opponent have a Wikipedia page? I love it. All right, Ryan, anything else for us?
Yeah, that's it. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Appreciate you calling. Call again. All right, guys, let's move on to another round of Fact or Fiction. All right, let's start with Chuck Liddell. Will fight in 2018. Zach, is that fact or fiction?
I'm gonna go with fact on this, just for a little bit of fun. I think, you know, the money's out there for him to get, and I think he's gonna be in a position to just say, hey, you know, why not go and get it? Not expecting anything big from him in 2018, but I think he will make a play for it, and I think he's gonna lace him up again.
Does it happen in Bellator?
Yes, I think it will happen in Bellator. And the precedent is set for guys like that coming back in and fighting there. So for that reason, I think he will.
And Robert, what do you think? Is that fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction. I think Liddell likes to have fun with the possibility on social media, and he likes that his name kind of gets brought out there. But anytime you've ever seen him interviewed, he doesn't really seem to be so serious about fighting. So I don't think it's something that actually happens.
Yeah, I'm going to side with Robert on this one. I think it's fiction as well, and I hope it's fiction, just because I don't think he needs to be fighting at this stage in his life. All right, next question. Rory McDonald will hold Bellator gold in two different Bellator weight classes. Zach, is that fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction on this one. He's a very talented guy, and I think, does he have the capability to do it? Yes, but it's just such a hard thing to do, and I'm just gonna vote on the side of history here and say no.
Do you think he holds at least one title in a weight class?
Yeah, I think he could definitely do that. I believe he's welterweight, correct?
Yeah, he's fighting Lima.
He's fighting in welterweight.
Well,
yeah, I think is much more of a reasonable prediction to make than the two weight class titles, for sure.
And Robert, do you agree with that?
I think he's going to hold multiple titles in Bellator. I think if we were to do a pound for pound ranking on Bellator, he'd be up at the top. And I think all these, as Benson Henderson kind of proved, all these ex-UFC fighters need to do is say, I want a title shot and you're granted one. So I think that the path is actually pretty a lot easier than it would be like in UFC, where you have all these pay-per-views to contend with. I think if it's his will, it'll be done.
I will jump in here and say that's a really good point. And, It almost makes me want to rethink my positioning on that, just because that makes a lot of sense. I'll stick with fiction, but that's a good point.
Yeah, I think that's a fact too. I think he will, hold titles in multiple weight classes in Bellator. So, keeping with the Rory McDonald theme here, Rory McDonald does in fact look like a serial killer. Robert, is that fact or fiction?
Well, I'll be an adult and say a serial killer can look like anybody, so I don't want to typecast somebody based on their appearance. With that said, if I was casting for a movie, I'm pretty sure that Rory McDonald would be at the top of my list if I was casting a serial killer, so I guess I'll say fact.
And Zach.
I'm going to say fact, too. I mean, that dude looks – he looks cool. So, fact all the way.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of Christian Bale in American Psycho a little bit.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to some WWE-related statements here. Jinder Mahal will be WWE champion again. Zach, is that fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction. And I'm going to say that because I don't think the India experiment worked. And I think he was the WWE champion to be that India experiment. There was nothing ahead of him winning the title that would make anyone believe, like, hey, WWE's positioning Jinder Mahal for this long title run outside of their attempt to enter the India market. And we saw with the results there, they canceled the show. It just didn't have him as champion, just did not have impact they were hoping. And at the same time, I think it had a detriment effect on the SmackDown brand here in the United States and everywhere else that the WWE is consistently. And I think if you put those two things together, I think, Vince and company just chalk it up to a decent idea, a valiant attempt, but it didn't work. And I think now the title's where it needs to be for SmackDown to grow. And I think at this point, what the WWE needs in those markets is just a popular champion whoever he is, whatever kind of background or wherever he comes from, is as long as he's popular and putting people in the seats, that's what they need. So valiant attempts, but I think his days at the top are over.
Yeah, I agree. I pray it's fiction, but I just don't trust Vince McMahon and his booking. So, but yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that's fiction. Robert, what do you say?
I'll say fiction as well, because if there was ever a time for him to be champion, it's in this time period, and that has obviously came and went. So it would make no sense to make him champion again. Plus, what the one thing you had going for him as champion was the how unbelievable it was that he was champion. You've lost that. I mean, even a guy like Jake Vidal, who they clearly like, he only had one title reign. So I think you've gotten what you need to get out of him, even if the results were underwhelming for your international business.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. Well, what about U.S. title? Robert, you think he holds the U.S. title?
Probably, because there's still value in the fact that he's an ex-champ, and I'm sure he'll still get a ton of heat. So I think you can put a title on him, and you can, if you want to rev up that xenophobic angle anytime, the U.S. title is kind of the perfect title to match with it.
Yeah, I think that makes much more sense as well. All right, guys, the next one here. WWE's holiday shows are the worst shows of the year. Robert, fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fact. The only one that would come close is when they go to Europe right after WrestleMania. Those shows are just like god-awful, and I just don't look forward to them all day long. But yeah, all the shows from now till we get to the January where they start getting revved up to the Royal Rumble, it's always just one big holdover of very long matches that are uninteresting and storylines that have no consequence to anything that'll be going on between January and March.
And Zach, fact or fiction?
Yeah, I agree. Fact. And for the same reason, it's just I think WWE understands that during this time people have a lot going on, and not that they don't necessarily want to be sitting in front of their TVs watching Monday Night Raw and SmackDown Live every week, but a lot of people can't with family gatherings and work parties and Christmas shopping and anything in between. You're not going to put on your top programming for an audience that is going to be lower just by the circumstances of the time of year that it is. So absolutely fact in that regard. They are pretty brutal.
Yeah, I agree. That's definitely fact. And last one here, guys. Robert, I'll start with you. Jessica I will be in the WWE by 2019. Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction because it's a little bit of a short turnaround for her to get to the WWE. Will she be more integrated into wrestling as she already is by 2019? I think that'll be a fact. She is so good at keeping her name in the news, even in times where she's completely irrelevant, that I think she definitely has a place in the wrestling world.
And Zach?
Yeah, I'm going to say for 2019, I'm going to say fiction, but I'm going to echo what Robert said, too. I think she has marketable qualities to her that fit well in the wrestling world. So while I don't think it'll happen in 2019, I definitely could see it happening at some point. She checks off a lot of boxes for what WWE looks to bring into their company as far as just raw athletic talent. Because she checks those boxes off, I think she could be a possibility in the future.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. I do think 2019 might be a little early, but I do think it's fact that it will happen eventually. All right, guys, that'll wrap up another round of Fact or Fiction. Let's take our last break, and then when we come back, we'll hit some email questions.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right, guys, let's wrap the show up with a couple email questions. First one is from James in Baltimore. James asks, since I'm a fan of Nate Diaz, who do you think he fights next and when? So we kind of touched on this a little bit during the second segment. So we can kind of just go back and kind of just talk about a little bit as far as who we think he's going to fight next. I think it's going to be Conor McGregor. Problem is, I just don't know when. That's the big question. Robert, I don't know if you have a little bit better feel for when that we possibly see that fight. But, yeah, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, my best guess would probably be sometime in quarter three of next year in that summer period. I think that'll be the big summer bout for the July card. But I think it's not any time in the near or immediate future.
Yeah, wow. I'm kind of surprised to hear you think that's going to be that far out. I mean, I really don't have a timetable, honestly. So, I'm kind of just open to hear what you guys think about it. Zach, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I definitely think it's going to be against Conor McGregor for sure at this point. I think there's no real reason for him to take any other fight if that one's still on the table. And as far as timing goes, yeah, I don't know if it'll be Q3, but I think it'll be sometime in the middle part of 2018 is what I'll go with. I think, McGregor at this point, it's tough to say, but all signs point to him taking on Tony Ferguson in his next fight. And I think he'll definitely take a couple months off after that. So, that if you do the math, that puts you right in the middle part of 2018. So I'll say that. June,
yeah, I can see it. Yeah, I guess it makes sense to have it, mid-year, somewhere around there. But definitely against Conor McGregor, I agree there. All right, next question is from Thomas. He didn't give a city here. Growing up, were you guys fans of Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair? And has your fandom changed over time? For me personally, I was always a Hulk Hogan guy. And that's because growing up in the Midwest, in the Chicago area, this was kind of AWA territory. And this is where, Hogan got his start for the most part before going to the WWF. So I've always been a Hogan guy. And even to this day, don't get me wrong, I respect Ric Flair and his body of work and everything he did. But one of the other reasons, too, was I never got to see a lot of, his stuff when he was in his prime. So the majority of Flair that I saw was kind of the stuff, when he was past his prime. So, my fandom hasn't changed. I will still side with Hulk Hogan. Zach, I'll go to you with this one.
Yeah, my fandom actually has changed a bit. I like you, growing up in Chicago, Hulk Hogan was the first, thing I saw to get me hooked on on wrestling. So for that, you know, he always has a special place in my wrestling lore, but is more of a fan than I became. You know, Ric Flair and watching Ric Flair has just been more entertaining for me, like, in the end. You know, like, while Hulk Hogan had this big personality and these big-time matches and all these fans, I've come to just enjoy Ric Flair wrestling more. You know, when I'm sitting down, you know, say, hey, I'm going to turn on some wrestling. Like, I don't really go to Hulk Hogan matches anymore, but I do go to Ric Flair matches. So I thank Hulk Hogan for introducing me and getting me pumped about pro wrestling, but Flair kind of solidified all that for me.
And Robert.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I came of age as a wrestling fan during the Attitude Era, and I was primarily a WWF fan. So to me, Hogan and Flair, when I was younger, were just kind of the dinosaurs on the WCW show. My first real exposure to either one of them in real time was the Hogan Nostalgia Tour in like 2002, and I loved that. I loved everything Hogan did in that era until he became Mr. America or whatever. So initially, I think I was much more on the Hogan bandwagon. I think with things like the network and YouTube, you really get to Ric Flair is more of an acquired taste, where you can just sit there and you want to watch an hour-long match with Ricky Steamboat, and you could be interested in how long his career was and all the good stuff he did. So I think right now my fandom probably leans more to Flair, but it was more initially Hogan. And it's weird, too, because from their personal lives, they're personally both very irredeemable people. Right. But for some reason, Flair is a little more likable. I don't know why. He just is to me. So I'll go with Flair as of right now.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, a lot of it for me, too, has to do with, you know, at least growing up, like what I was attracted to as far as wrestling goes. Like, I like big personalities, and I was more into, I guess, like the more of a show of it. So guys like The Undertaker and The Ultimate Warrior and Hogan, you know, just big personalities, you know, with really kind of, you know, cool gimmicks. And then, you know, now, while I still enjoy that, now I'm much more apt to kind of sit down and watch, you know, like a Finn Balor against AJ Styles match because, you know, now as I'm older, work rate is a much bigger deal for me. But, you know, growing up as a kid, it was always kind of those, you know, those bigger than personality type guys who you really wouldn't say that about, you know, as far as Styles and Balor goes today. So I don't know if you guys, you know, any comments on that, but, you know, just as a kid, you know, that's how I always thought.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm the same kind of thing. It's easy to be, you know, attracted to Hulk Hogan walking out in as a, you know, major character, and it's hard not to look at that and go, whoa, that's awesome. I just think, you know, like Robert said, Flair is a little bit of an acquired taste. You have to go through that initial Hulk Hogan phase, I think, to really appreciate what Ric Flair brings to the table.
Yeah, for sure. All right, last one here, guys. This comes from Rebecca in Utica. She asks, and Zach, she must follow you on PW Torch, too. So she asks, Zach, do you think it was too soon for WWE calling up Mandy Rose to the main roster? I will leave that one for you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. And honestly, I don't think it was too soon at all. In my mind, if she was never going to be a woman in NXT that was going to have the division on her shoulders. She's not that kind of performer. She doesn't have the experience. She's not Asuka. She's not Ember Moon. She can't have those kind of matches. And as strange as it sounds, some people and some competitors are more suited for the main roster work than they are in NXT. And I think a perfect example of that on the men's side is someone like Elias, who didn't really have much of a run in NXT, now has gotten great reactions and who has had, you know, some decent stories on the main roster because he fits a little bit better. And I think Mandy Rose fits better on that main roster in a supplemental role for Paige. She can take the beatings, she can have short matches and just be a supplement player on the main roster. I think that's kind of where her career peaks. I don't know that she'll be much more than that. Maybe she'll prove me wrong. Hopefully she does. But at this time, looking at her body of work, I think that's kind of where she'll stay, and I think that's where she'll have the most impact. So I think, why not bring her up now? She didn't really have much left to accomplish or do in NXT.
And Robert, any thoughts?
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with it either. She was on the road with NXT, so it's not like she was not working. We just didn't see her a lot on NXT TV. And like you said, she's probably not going to reach the top. I mean, there was no reason for Mojo Rawley to still be at NXT. It was just fine when they called him up. My only fear with her is that it could be like the Bobby Lashley effect, that she very much, from a visual standpoint, fits exactly what Vince wants to push. So might she be skyrocketed way too soon before she's ready, and it wouldn't be fair to her where she would get that backlash of being pushed immediately. That's my only real concern with her being up on the main roster.
All right, Rebecca, hope that answers
I agree with that
your
too.
Question. Go ahead.
No, as I said, I definitely agree with that. If that's the case, then hindsight will be 20/20 on that. I think if that's what does happen, I think then it will have been a bad call. But for right now, where I think she's positioned, yeah, I think that's okay. Agree with Robert.
All right. Zach, go ahead and give our listeners info on how they can follow you and anything else that you want to add.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at ZHeydorn. That's at ZHeydorn. That's a 98% MMA and pro wrestling related topics. You can also check out my MMA Torch column every week on Thursday, and you can check out my PW Torch coverage of 205 Live every week on Tuesday after 205 Live airs.
All right, and Robert, go ahead and give our listeners info on how they can follow you.
Sure. Follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. And listeners, feel free to address an email to me anytime you would like to.
Well played. Well played. And you can follow me on Twitter at FightChampBlog, and you can follow the brand at MMA Torch. So for Zach and Robert, my name is Mike Grocki, and we will be back next week for another episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.